Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
discussing various IRS administrative remedies with our speaker, Mr. Tony Davis. My name is Martin Michaels. I'll be your host for this evening's conference brought to you by Your Remedies in the Law, which is in direct affiliation with Americans Restoring America. Before we get started with this evening, though, it is very important that I provide you with the following disclaimer.
Nothing that you hear on this call tonight may be deemed by you in any way, shape, or form to be legal advice. If you are on this call because of a situation in your life where you require legal advice, I very bluntly ask you to hang up the phone. Now, we don't mean to sound rude when we say this. We just want to express to everyone in no uncertain terms that anyone joining this call looking for legal advice has no place or business here. Nobody here at Your Remedies in the Law or any of the programs offered by Americans Restoring America is a lawyer, attorney, or any member of the bar. Therefore, no one here is able to offer you any legal advice. Should you require legal advice, my advice to you would be get an attorney. As for these calls, they're all just for entertainment purposes. It's just folks saying what they might do where they're similarly situated to you. You might get a little bit of education out of it, but mainly you're just going to get folks' opinions about what they might do. However educated and experienced these thoughts and opinions might be, they are just people's opinions nonetheless. And it's always up to you to do your own due diligence. All right, on to the next subject. I'd like to go over a few things here with Your Remedies in the Law, if I could, very quickly. First of all, if I can take everybody to the homepage of www.yourremediesinthelaw.com, if we look up in the upper right-hand corner, we see a little picture of the Constitution. Click on that, and you'll have a separate page come up with just two items on it. These two items are much important, though, especially if this is all new to you. First and most importantly on the left is the jurisdictionary course. This is your 24-hour crash course on the rules of civil procedure. Better known to some as American jurisprudence or ANJUR, the rules of civil procedure are essentially the foundation or structure upon which all law in America rests. So to have a firm and thorough understanding of these rules means to have at least a basic understanding of what's going on in virtually any court scenario that you find yourself in. On the right is the common law default process, mostly known for its high national win rate in most traffic cases throughout the country. At least that's what it's most popularly acquired for. But that is not really why it's on this page. The reason that we have it up here with the jurisdictionary course is when you go through it, you'll notice that it utilizes a lot of the same fundamental procedures that you learned about in the jurisdictionary course. So it kind of acts as a real-life homework assignment. Also, for a lot of folks, it's their first time committing to action. Folks seem a little more willing to take that first step, probably because of such a high success rate and traffic scenarios being such a common interest in this country today. The common law default, although known majorly for traffic purposes, has many other. Truly, it's for most scenarios that you may find yourself in where there's no damage to property or person. It's just some entity is claiming you broke a rule, therefore you must pay a civil penalty. Both of these items are very affordably priced. The jurisdictionary with a contribution of $250 and the common law default at $150. Also on the subject of Your Remedies in the Law, most of you are probably familiar now with Americans Restoring America. Every time you visit the homepage of yourremediesinthelaw.com, you are met with that blue box that pops up asking if you'd like to continue on to the site that you were visiting or stay and visit Americans Restoring America. The reason that we've done this is very simple. We're trying to get folks to explore. There are multiple information providers talking about multiple subjects, as well as many other features and study groups at Your Remedies in the Law. And Your Remedies in the Law is just one of a couple dozen websites that all together make up Americans Restoring America. So there's quite a bit for you to see, and we hope that you'll do just that at your leisure. If you have any questions about whether or not we have an information provider that could give you their personal educated opinion about your particular situation, get a hold of us at yourremediesinthelaw.com, and we'll be happy to assist you in any way that we can. Statewide communications. If you're not already a member, please do sign up. Tell your friends and family about it. That's that map of the United States that you see on virtually every site that we have. It's a private communications platform that enables folks to speak with one another on a local level based on a very strict, pre-decided topics of discussion. Essentially, how it works is this. A wizard will walk you through a very easy setup you know, put your name in here, click next. Put your zip code in here, click next, that sort of thing. Then I will walk you through the remainder of the setup. And then you get to a point where it will ask you what are your hot points interested in. This could range anything from credit card issues, home foreclosure, IRS matters, asset protection, or maybe veterans' rights, maybe personal health rights, anything that you can think of. And if it affects your personal rights, you should find it in that list or something that's close enough. When the setup is complete, it puts it all together, much in the way you think of a social network. Though nothing like a social network. It's very custom, it's very private. But it then puts you in contact with people in your local area that have similar interests to you. The idea here is to put the power of education and communication back in the hands of the common man. If you are in need of legal advice or you need someone to represent you, you're going to have to get an attorney. It's just that simple. But if there was a way, a private place that you could go to discuss matters, your personal opinions, their personal opinions, with people that were like-minded, maybe you jump online one day and you say, this happened to me today. First person comes back and says, well, I disagree with that. I don't think that they should be able to do that. I don't think that's fair. Well, that's probably not going to be a tremendous amount of help to you. Maybe the next person comes on and says, well, I'll tell you what I would do were I similarly situated. I'd watch these YouTube videos, and then I'd go down there to my local county courthouse, go to the law library, get a law dictionary, and look up these terms. Maybe the next person after that says, those all sound like great ideas. I'd also go to this particular website and check out these educational materials that might assist you in your learning. And then for you to go and do some due diligence on what you're reading, just people's suggestions, people's opinions at all. But if you did some due diligence and educated yourself, maybe the farther you got into it, you discovered that it's not as difficult as you initially thought it would be because you're focused on one single subject. And you get to the point where you've educated yourself, and now you're handling your own affairs, your own matters. Well, folks, there's nothing illegal or unlawful about that. And that's all we're trying to do here at Statewide Communications is just very simply get people start talking again. Of course, there's no cost to you for using Statewide Communications, either signing up or the regular using of it. And so we hope that you'll pass that around. Freedoms Radio. If you're over the road, you don't want to deal with the call process, and you're just new to your remedies in the law, and you don't yet have your username and password, therefore you can't see the phone number and the PIN. By the way, if you'd like to pick up a membership to your remedies in the law, it's very easy. You just simply click the register button. Fill out your basic information there. You'll enjoy the first 30 days for free to evaluate it. After that, it converts to a very affordable $10 a month on your credit card or your PayPal. But every single call is recorded. You have years of archives to go through, a vast wealth of knowledge, as well as many other wonderful features. But if that's not an option for you today, you have freedomsradio.com. Every night, the calls go out over the air at 9 p.m. Eastern live. There's also the question bar there where you can type in a question, click submit. As long as that's during call hours, that will pop up on the moderator screen, and we do our best to read every single one of those questions out over the air as long as they are appropriate. So you don't get the one-on-one with the information provider like you would be by being a private member, but you do get your questions answered. There's no cost to utilize Freedoms Radio, so no matter where you are or your circumstances, you never have to miss a call again if you don't wish. All right, so winding down here, I'd like to go over one last bit of housekeeping. This is your caveat emptor or your buyer beware. For any purchase that you may make, if your remedy is in the law or any of the other sites underneath the umbrella of Americans Restoring America, when you come aboard and you go with an information provider, you are doing just that. Information providers pay Mr. Edward for advertising at your remedy is in the law. This payment would be an expense to that information provider along with any other expenses that they might have associated with your particular product or service. When you contact us, all we simply do is listen to your particular scenario, quickly deduce from a list of folks that, honestly, most of you would probably never be able to find on your own just simply because they can't be found. Can we make those introductions? Not every part on the information provider is always going to be successful. Everybody always hopes for the best. We plan for the best, and believe you me, we aim for the best. But unavoidable things do sometimes happen, And when they do, you have to roll with them and deal with them as you would with anything else in life. But we also want to emphasize, though, that the intent is always to be successful. If you have any questions of that, we welcome you to visit www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com/testimonials and see what others have to say about these products and services. Now, let's touch very quickly on the subject of refunds or the refund policy. There is none. Not as for Remedy Is in the Law, anyway. Of course, when you come aboard and you go with a particular information provider, again, that is exactly what you're doing. So any discussion of a refund or a credit would be a strict and private matter between you and the information provider, and even then, that's very few and far between. It must be extenuating circumstances. You are expected to have done your due diligence before you commit to any particular process or information provider's time. All right, lastly, pertaining here to all of the information providers at Your Remedy Is in the Law, we'd like you to remind everybody that all of our speakers at these conferences are our guests and should be treated with the highest level of respect. If you disagree with something that a speaker has to say, that's fine. Disagreeing is how we learn, but please, you must always be civil. Besides, if a question is posed properly and then answered properly, then we can all learn something from it.
Well, Martin, we thank you so very, very much for that disclaimer. We appreciate you, sir. Tonight, we have Brother John live and on the desk, on the table here, going to share with you his very exciting weekend. This past week, Brother John was an actual delegate involved in the Texas process of our government. If you would, we'll let him get into the whole nuts and bolts of it, but he's going to share with you much of what came out of this weekend's efforts that he participated in. So without further ado, it is my pleasure to turn this call over to Brother John.
Well, thank you, Martin. Thank you, Michael, both for that very kind and gracious introduction. Thank you. Yeah, last week, right after, literally, right after I got out of surgery, my son came pick me up, we were both delegates to the Republican Senatorial Convention held in San Antonio, Texas. And, you know, they say the best defense is a good offense. You know, we here at Your Remedies in the Law have learned a lot about the truth. There's an old saying, it says, you shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. One of the truths, and, you know, and I like to, you know, this is kind of one of my favorite topics, so I'll shamelessly bring it up, is the Second Amendment issue with the, you know, the right to keep and bear arms. And before I went to the convention, I had maybe one or two of those little business cards printed up, or maybe even three or four, or, you know, a few hundred or a couple thousand. And kept them with me. I'm in a wheelchair, so I have this backpack ag bag that sits on the back, so I can hide all the extra boxes in that ag bag. And I was asked. I had been passing them out once in a while, just chatting with people. I walked up to a couple of judges that were running for re-election, one in the 14th Court of Appeals and the other in the 9th Criminal Court. And I asked him, I says, gentlemen, so running for re-election, huh? And he says, oh, yeah. And, well, sell me on voting for you. You know, help me. They just couldn't wait to dive in. And they both were telling me about their, you know, their conviction rate in the 9th Criminal Court of Appeals and the fact that they had smacked down a lot of convicted felons at the appellate level. And I asked, and I held out the cards, and the cards are very, very short. On one side it says, dot, 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 Your Honor, comma, Where in the Constitution does it suit my right to keep and bear a firearm in this place, let alone your courtroom? Question mark. And on the other side, it says 18 U.S.C. 242, carriage return, deprivation of rights under color of law, period. Second-degree felony, federal second-degree felony. And they both looked at me, and I didn't realize they had such poor dental hygiene in the jurisprudence in the with the judges, because both of them, their teeth were laying on the ground. And the guy goes, well, that's kind of you have to look at that with the group and the safety, and there's a whole lot of things that are involved with that that, you know, that doesn't just directly. And I says, and I asked the other guy from the Ninth Criminal Court of Appeals. He says, well, I says, you took over Diane's seat, didn't you? He goes, you know Diane? I says, oh, I might, you know. And we were chatting, and all of a sudden he goes, you're him. I says, I'm him who? She says, she resigned because of you. And I says, no, nobody would resign because of me, you know. And she says, yeah, she was afraid she was going to get prosecuted. He says, don't, you know, he says, you know, it is totally wrong to consider that anybody could attempt to bring a gun in the court building. And I says, oh, when I was listening to a couple other people chat, I quick pulled out my laptop and I looked up both of them, and I emailed a friend to do a quick bio on them, and she sent me the bio back very, very quickly. And I said, so you'd be willing to take your 7 years, 4 months, and 3 days of tenure throw it away and violate your constitutional oath of office, and because you have some other agenda? You're going to throw away your retirement, possibly go to jail or prison forever? He says, well, we have judicial immunity. And they jumped in my face. They were saying, you can't touch us. We have judicial immunity. And I says, well, can you say that a little bit louder? And because they'd already said it kind of loud. And I looked around, and there was a crowd starting to gather. And I says, what do you mean? I says, well, Article 3, Section 1, Paragraph 1 to the Constitution makes it very, very clear that the judiciary only maintain their office in times of good behavior. And that, so that indicates there is, that means if there is bad behavior, that would mean that you cannot maintain your oath of office. And they were, they says, well, the Constitution doesn't apply in this situation. And all of a sudden, there's a larger crowd of people circling around these two candidates for judge. And, you know, and I says, well, you know, I says, Article 3, Section 1, Paragraph 1, Line 2, says the judges of both the Supreme and Inferior Courts shall hold their offices during times of good behavior. I says, how does that not apply to you? I says, you know, and they both all of a sudden was periscoped down. I says, wait a minute. Have either of you violated your oath of office? Are you currently unable to actually sit? You know, and I go, this is everyone shall maintain an oath of office. You know, it's just, you know, and I went over that. I told him Article 6 is very clear. Article 6, Paragraph 3, the senators and representatives before mentioned and the members of the several state legislatures, executive and judicial officers of both the United States and several states should be bound by an oath of affirmation to support this Constitution. And I says, if you violate that oath, then you cannot sit, you know. And one of them very quickly handed me my card back, you know, went off. And the people that were standing around, the little crowd that was there, started clapping and cheering, and the other one was so white-faced, I turned to him, I says, but you would never do that, would you? You know, you're going to do your best to maintain your oath of office and uphold the Constitution. Well, he says, you know, I'm in the Ninth Criminal Court. He says, you don't know what I have to deal with. The criminals that we're trying to keep off the streets and, you know, that regularly violate and are breaking the law with the, you know, as far as, you know, carrying firearms. And I says, you're saying carrying a firearm, if they're exercising their constitutional rights, is a crime? And I, you know, and he goes, well, and by this time there's about 35 or 40 individuals standing around there, and they were all asking, well, they started asking him, well, what is it? Is it, you know, are you up to violating the Constitution? I says, would you consider violating the Constitution for some alter or agenda or something? And the people, they start pulling out their phones and looking up each of these as I was pulling it up. And this gentleman, turns out the other judge had a booth on the other side of the exhibition floor. He went back to his booth, but this one, this was his booth. He couldn't leave. So, and they started asking him, and they said, and I says, well, you know what? I believe in the Constitution, and I may have a law degree, and I says, you know, and upholding my major was in constitutional law with a minor in criminal. And I says, you know, I'd like to consider voting for you, and could you help give me the confidence that I need to know that you're the candidate I want to vote for? And, boy, he batted around, and finally a bunch of people holding, they says, well, where do you stand on this? A bunch of people holding their phones up, taking video recorded, says, I guess I'm going to have to stand on the Constitution, won't I? You know, and he says, I guess. And I says, well, you guess or you're going to? And he goes, I'm going to. No guessing about it. And he says, and everybody started clapping and cheering. And we turned a judge around right there. And then I asked him about what happens in a criminal trial when somebody wants the assistance of counsel. He says, well, you know, they can hire an attorney. What happens if they would like their grandmother to assist them? Well, you know, he says, there's a problem with that, you know, and he started going in. I says, to have assistance of counsel, he says, well, they have to be a member of the bar. And I says, the Bar Association didn't come into the American Bar Association didn't come into being until 1878, February 1878, 87 years after the Sixth Amendment was penned and ratified. And everybody says, yeah, well, so how about that? And that one, almost an hour at his booth, he ended, okay, you know, he says, I guess, you know, I guess we have to allow that. And we, I says, so the bar is just a economic function. He goes, no, it's illegal. And it has its roots in, you know, American jurisprudence. I says, nowhere in the Constitution does it talk about, or the Bill of Rights does it talk about the Bar Association or any association to, or, hang on just a second here, my throat's dry. Thank you for your patience. I had to get a little something to wet my whistle there. It's kind of hot here right now. The power's been off most of the day, and the internet's been off, and all the batteries in the laptops are all dead and everything else. And So I'm talking to you on my phone and my headset. I got a juice back to keep me charged right now. And we had some meteorological entertainment that picked up some vehicles, and one of them is almost 100 feet away. This is twice in 2 weeks that a vehicle was picked up and parked almost 100 feet from where it was originally sitting. When I say a vehicle, I mean an airplane. I live on an airport, and David Wayne Hooks Airport in the Houston area. And we had flooding here. We haven't been able to get in and out for about 6-7 hours because the roads have trees across them, and in some places the water is still not passable. But so we're having a teensy-weensy bit of fun. But getting back to the real fun, this judge on video, on cell phones, admitted finally, you know, we said the Bar Association, ABA, wasn't even, it was over 87 years after the Sixth Amendment with they shall have the assistance for counsel for defense, you know, after that was penned and ratified, you know, and he says, well, I guess I've been mistaken all these years. And we got down to a handful of other things. And presently we have some students that are battling this with judiciary, and we're preparing to file criminal actions against the judiciary. But I got pulled into a little meeting where there were 17 members of the judiciary, two state representatives, a state senator, and four sheriffs that were in this session. And somebody came out and asked me if I had any of those cards, and I came in and handed out a handful of cards, and I got the chance to explain this as well. Where in the Constitution does it say we don't have the right to keep and bear a firearm in that school ground or and some of the judiciary, two of them erupted immensely. But as we began to talk, some of them one of them come running over and says, I need some of those cards. Finally, the last two that were just object, finally they were saying, this is really the law, isn't it? And I was thinking to myself, these are both sitting benches, gavels, and they realized in the cussing and discussing in that session, in the rules-making session, that they that what we were saying had premise and basis in law. And some of the congressional sessions and the senatorial sessions that I was in, there were individuals that asked me to stand up and speak on it. And there was a couple times where I didn't know somebody was going to ask me, and they texted my phone, and somebody walks up, and the chair in this congressional session recognized the person standing up and says, oh, I'm just walking over to him to see if he's got some of those cards, and he'll share with us about those cards. And I'm going, and I'm thinking to myself, I am not on the the list of presenters or speakers in this session, you know, and for the rules there, that doesn't actually apply. You know, I mean, I can't just volunteer and stand up. You know, you got to be on the program in advance. Well, the chairman says, yes, John, we would like to know about that. And of all things, the Republican candidate for sheriff for the county that I live in was in that session. And I wheeled my wheelchair up to the front of the to the room and was addressing all the delegates, and we had Ted Cruz, U.S. Senator, in the room at the time, and we had some state senators and state representatives, and they all commented after I got done that we need to work on legislation to correct this, and I made a comment. I says, delete the existing legislation that makes it that is in controversy to the Constitution. And everybody started clapping and cheering. And the legislators that were in the room agreed that they would need to have that put on their agenda. And three of them, there's one or more of their assistants were there, and they says, look, we need to make an appointment with him because we're going to bring this up into next session, congressional session or senatorial session, you know, at the Capitol. And the big thing that's important here, the takeaway. Normally, when you go to a senatorial convention, you know, the platform for that particular party is what is one of the big things that they work on. And the platform is what the our elected officials use to guide and vote when they have a question or when they, something comes up to be voted on. And they when they don't, they themselves, because remember, our congressmen, our representatives, and our senators are air-breathing, blood-pumping human beings just like you and I. And do they know it all? No way. The thing that guides them, and that thankfully most of, more than the majority, refer to the platform and the planks in that platform that that are there when they're asked to vote on something during a regular congressional session or and for Texas, I'm holding in my hand, it says reports of permanent rules, platform resolutions, and legislative priorities committees. You know, and this is the Republican one, the Texas GOP convention, May 23rd through the 25th. Although I stayed there till the 27th and continued to meet with individuals that wanted to meet with me on different topics. But in here, we revised a whole bunch of things. One of them is that school finance and property taxation, one of the points is that now they have to have a two-thirds majority of voting to adjust any benefits of any individuals that are employed by the school district. And one of them is that it's called Axe the Property Tax. We support replacing the property tax system for businesses and individuals with an alternate other than income tax requiring voter approval to increase the overall tax burden, and we demand the legislature to immediately develop and implement the transitional plan at the next for the net tax cut immediately. And there's a I'm holding a document right now that it's not a small document. I have a handful of things here that that I got a handful of personal signatures from elected officials that, and this 60 some odd page document that I have, that I have three referendums that I now have enough signatures because I was at the convention and I was able to meet the legislators, and that I now have what it takes to submit to the Congress and the Senate for a review and approval to have certain things. One of them is where, and this is one of my personal favorites, we're working toward axing the necessity of the Bar Association in Texas. We're slowly working toward that. Presently, there are students that were currently fighting against judges that they consider that they only want officers of the court on the forward side of the bar, or the divider, that wall between the spectators and the judiciary. And they refuse to allow individuals to have anyone they choose as counsel. And they're depriving of their rights under color of law, and we're fighting some serious uphill battles. Well, in the main congressional session, the last one that we had there, that the last one that had everybody in it, what happened was is the, on the congressional district general session number four, we bought up that question about the attorneys and where are they, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and where the legal requirement was that superseded the Constitution. And the chairman, the outgoing chairman, he says, that's in the rules. You can't, I says, respectfully, Mr. Chairman and honored panel members and honored delegates, I says, are we saying that we're going to let some policies from a non-legislative organization supersede the Constitution? And they says, well, we're working on getting it legislated. I says, so the legislature is conspiring presently to deprive citizens of their rights under color of legislation, deprive them of their right to have whoever they want with counsel. And I says, Mr. Chairman, do I understand what you're saying correctly, or did I misunderstand that you're not participating in that that conspiracy? He goes, oh, I'm not participating in it. It was instantaneous, you know. But the big takeaway that I want to encourage all of you is that when your state conventions come up, after you get done voting and your precinct has its precinct caucus meeting after the polls close, give the presiding judge and the alternate judge and the poll watchers time to close the polls. And then what they do is, you know, they have elections for every, you know, for all kinds of things, including the precinct chair. And that's where the precinct chair is elected. And, you know, if you would like to serve as a precinct chair, this is the place to I would not recommend that you self-nominate, but this is the place where you can have your spouse or a friend say, hey, I'd like to nominate me for precinct chair. And what you do is at the precinct convention, then you make you go to what are called a local congressional or senatorial conventions, and there you make nominations for delegates to the state convention. Subsequently, now there is one more level, the delegates at the state convention make nominations to go to the national convention. And I actually had a chance to participate in a couple of things, but one of them I was nominated as the elector, and there were five of us nominated. And at that particular you know, and everybody knows what an elector is. It's for the Electoral College. You would be the person that goes to the Electoral College to vote for this candidate or that candidate. And another gentleman got up and he says, I would like to withdraw my nomination in favor of this other person. And that person got up, and everybody knew this man was the right man for the job, for the elector. I knew it. I was going to nominate him until I got nominated. And then what happened was is that he got up and he started bantering and saying, well, I didn't really, this was not my, you know, I did not intend. And I said, James, don't, and I rolled up to the other microphone on the wheelchair. I said, don't worry, it's much worse than you think. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your honorable consideration in in being nominated for the elector. At this time, before voting commences, I would like to everyone to consider that James is probably the best candidate in this room, and I defer. And I would like anyone that had considered voting for me and those that nominated me to consider voting for James, and I would like to sway all of my support to James. And everybody started clapping and cheering. And James then did accept the nomination. Then we had to vote. But according to the rules, you know, if you don't have a majority for the office that's being put up there for vote, you have to reduce the field of voters or the candidates by one each time. And then everybody re-votes. We never had the whole time in the senatorial convention, senatorial district convention, a candidate gets majority vote. James did. And so James commented, his wife commented afterward, he says, you know, you realize you probably, what you did swung the vote so that this is, that everyone, what you said, changed that candidate. You know, everybody's idea of the candidate to him, and that support that you gave in those few words you gave made all the difference. And everybody, this is the first time that we had a majority vote on the first vote. And so I felt like I had actually done something good, because when I originally I had considered three people had already talked to me about accepting. They said, if we nominate you, will you accept it? And I told them, you know, and one of them, brought that up, I says, there's a better candidate than myself. It's the old committee chairman, James, you know, and it was shocking. You know, they were dead shocked. And then they kind of almost slapped their forehead and says, you're right. There is, you know, and I didn't have time to campaign for him in advance, but I felt like I had done something good and the right man for that office was in. And it turns out that at one of them I didn't withdraw, but I said, they wouldn't let me withdraw. And I says, well, you guys are not letting me withdraw, but what I'm going to do is for delegate to the national convention, because right now I have some health problems and I'm in a wheelchair and I'm probably not the best candidate for you, although it would be my great honor to be there. And I explained to him, I says, this other, you have two much better candidates than myself there. And one of them has already been there and knows what it is to serve as the delegate to national. And that individual ended up getting elected in the session there. But and it comes to the point where we find that a lot of people think about the electoral process, which this is where it starts. This is the grassroots. They think about delegates to the convention that end up for the nomination for the candidates and that the electors that actually elect the candidate, this is where it happens. This is at your state convention level. And you notice I haven't mentioned, except for the fact that I was talking about when I was reading from the platform, I mentioned that that was from one particular party. There are people that I work as I've worked at every election in the last 30 some odd years, almost 40 years, as either a presiding judge, an alternate judge, or a poll watcher. And some people say, well, I know what a judge is, you know, and the alternate is just the same thing. But poll watcher, what's that? Well, if somebody's going to break the rules and somebody's go to jail, the poll watcher is the one that's going to be sending them to jail. I'm the one that has the county prosecutor's phone number on speed dial in my cell phone. And I'm the one that also one of the only individuals that's allowed to carry a firearm. It used to be I was one of the only individuals that's allowed to carry a firearm as a poll watcher. And yeah, I have a pair of handcuffs in my ag bag. And so far to date, I've never actually had to use those. I've always managed to talk them, people or the individuals through their wrongdoing in front of others and get them corrected and then support that. And I was told that I took the worst armpit, snake pit precinct that I did not know that the presiding judge there was already under federal and state felony indictments for election fraud, and that they expected a whole lot of very bad things out of this. And they sent me over there to work as the poll watcher, I didn't know that. And when things were coming up during the day, and it started with very simple things. Yeah, there were campaign posters within 30 or 40 feet of the entrance to the polling place. And I said, you know what, these need to be moved back to the 100-foot fixed distance, you know. And she goes, well, I'm sorry. That's the way it's always been. I've been here 26 years, and that's the way it's done. That's the way it's going to stay. And I says, excuse me? I says, ma'am, you know, please, this is, and I quoted her the chapter, paragraph, and verse, you know, that the Texas election law that requires that. She goes, well, that's not how it's being done, and I'm the presiding judge. And I says, you know what? I'm not going to be the one going to jail today for violating the Texas election law. You know what? I'm not a very good communicator. And I pulled out my phone, and I started dialing Vince Ryan, who was the county attorney at the time. And she walks over, and she saw Vince Ryan's name in the caller. You know, and I says, why are you calling him? I says, well, this is getting corrected, and I'm not the one going to jail today. You know, and Vince, you know, and I put on speakerphone. I says, I'm hard of hearing, so I got to turn on speaker. Vince Ryan says, hey, John, what's happening? I said, you know, and he says, you got a problem at your precinct? I says, well, could you send a couple of guys over? It looks like you might be taking a couple of people. And all of a sudden, she puts her hand in front of her mouth and shh. You know, I says, hold on a second, Vince. You know, can I put you on hold? And she goes in the doors, the people that she just unlocked the door to let them in. She says, all y'all get out here and get all those campaign signs more than 100 feet away from the door. Get them out there right now. And Vince says, you know, John, you there? It's on mute. And the finance says, yeah, Vince, it looks like it might have, there might have been a misconstruction. And you know what? And he says, well, call me back later and tell me what happened. I says, that's fine, Vince. You know, and four times between the hours of 6:41 and 9 a.m., I had to call Vince, you know, and four times they corrected the problems immediately. And one of them was is that they, although they were tabulating at the machines that were issuing the voting slips, I had my counterpart, the other poll watcher at JBC number one, it's called Judge Ballot Control number one, and I was on number two. And they didn't know that we had a fish counter in our pockets at the time, and I was clicking every time somebody legitimately registered to vote, except that the tally for the total votes at the two-hour voting thing on the that they were publishing up there and that were actually in the ballot box was almost 2.5 times what Paul, my other counterpart poll watcher, and I had on our fish counters. And the presiding judge, her name was Barbara. This is the one that turns out later I found out the next day that she was under multiple felony grand jury indictments. And the alternate judge from the other party, her name was Barbara also. She called me up the next morning and says, you know, Barbara's under multiple. And she says, we're expecting you to have to take her to jail. And that they, all of a sudden, there was no more disparity on the numbers of how many had voted versus how many didn't. On the judge ballot control, JBC boxes, you know, you're issued a little number back then that, you know, you go type into the ballot box, the ballot voting machine, and it authorizes you to vote. Well, it turns out that they may have accidentally been issuing more of those than they were supposed to, and that turns out when Paul wasn't looking, I saw the girl palm issue and palm three of them with nobody in front of her of these slips, and she stacked them up, and when she pulled the slip for the next guy out, she set it on top of the three she'd already had in her palm and handed it to him as if it was one. Paul could not see that. She didn't realize that I could see her do that. And and I walked over, and the presiding judge says, she says, you can't talk to the voters. She says, you know, you're the cops. If somebody's going to jail, you know. I says, yes, ma'am. So I think there accidentally was an extra voting slip or two or maybe three accidentally stuck together for this person that's going up to vote right now. And she says, that's preposterous. And I says, well, it might have been accidental. It might have been the clerk. But before it becomes a criminal matter and before somebody has to go to jail, I suppose if we get it rectified before somebody attempts to vote the extra slips. And she says, okay. And she talked to the person, and she says, show me what you got in your hand. Barbara, you can't do that. You told me you wouldn't. Whoops. Talk about giving away the farm. Oh, holy broken tree feathers, Batman. And what happened was is that she got the other three back, and she started to tear them up. I says, no, ma'am, you cannot tear those up. They have to be turned in as spoiled and disposed of in the spoiled certificate pack envelope, the green envelope with the, and I explained everything. And she goes, oh, all right, you know. And I said, that gentleman over there just left two slips at that voting, that ballot machine that he just got. We need to turn one of those in as spoiled. And that ballot machine, it turns out, this was only like 7:15. I says, he's the first one to use that machine. So we're going to have the technician from downtown come in, and we've got to take that ballot machine out of circulation. And the second one on the time count that has been voted has to be voided. She says, you can't. I says, you know what? You're right. And as I picked up the phone, and she says, oh, we'll get it taken care of right away. You know, and when it came time to lunch, I bought everybody from both parties lunch. I ordered these huge Subway sandwich platters. I ordered chips. I bought in two ice coolers with me in the morning that had this kind of energy drink, that kind of high test drink, those kinds of sodas, this type of lemonade, that type of iced tea. I had huge 60-quart coolers, two of them. And when we left at 7:48 that night, after the polls closed at 7 that night, she says, look, if I've got to ever have another poll watcher, she stopped everybody. She says, I want to be this man right here. And what happened was that I still didn't know that she was under felony grand jury indictments at the time. And there were, you know, there were times when I was working as a primary judge and somebody says, well, who would you vote for? I says, ma'am, you know, right now, if you would have asked me that at 6:59 this morning or 7:01 this evening, I might share something with you. But when it turns 7 o'clock, and it turns 7 tonight, between those hours, my job is to, regardless of whether I agree with you or disagree with you, even if you would vote for somebody that I would stand in my soapbox and spend a life advocating against that person or that ballot consideration, or that referendum, it's my job to see that you, your voice is heard for your vote for today. And I have not, and I cannot have any personal perceptions or feelings on the matter. My exclusive feelings are to see that your voice as a voter, as a member of the public, is heard, and that you get the honor and the privilege of voting who you please, and for the referendums and the everything that you initiatives that you choose to vote for or against, you know. And a bunch of people heard me say that to her, and that was 4 years before that, actually at the same polling place where they didn't have a Republican primary presiding judge there, and I went to work there as a presiding judge. The following, 2 year later, the midterm, my son worked as the presiding judge, and I worked as the alternate, and my wife worked as the translator, from Spanish to English. Actually, my wife speaks 11 languages, 5 without an accent. She also speaks English. Some people say, ask me how many languages I'm working on. I say, what do you mean? I'm still working on English, you know. So that day, my family was kind of the backbone for an area that was weak for one party. And they had, it was past 10 o'clock before we saw the first Caucasian voter at that, during that election there. It was a primarily ethnically black background community, and you know, but every one of those, ever since I worked as an election judge or precinct chair since the early 90s in 92, I've bought lunch for everybody, and I found that it's amazing what you can do and what the people, even those that oppose your beliefs, how you can blend a pleasant consideration into it. And to this day, some of those individuals were at the Republican Senatorial Convention that I was at last week and this weekend, and they still remember those days. And sometimes when I raised my hand and I called for the vote, they voted with me the way that I, a lady and a gentleman, both black, said that they would have never voted that way otherwise, but because it was me asking and calling for the vote, they voted the way I was recommending, because of the way I treated them and the respect that I treated them with almost 30 years ago. With that, I'll close by saying, please, please, please get involved in your state state conventions. Get a copy, they're all online, of the platforms and resolutions and the reports for permanent rules and legislative priorities committees. See if when you go to your precinct caucuses, if you haven't already signed up as a delegate, at least sign up as a guest and see if you can get converted to an alternate, or if you can't get signed up as a delegate, get signed up as an alternate so that at the convention, if there's somebody that didn't make it and their weighted number of delegates has not been met, then you will have the honor and the privilege of being a delegate with the same weighted vote authority as all the rest of the delegates. This is your chance to make not just the difference that you would make on November 6th voting, but it's the chance to make a double difference. And with that, my time has come to a close. It is considered an honor and a privilege to serve beside each and every one of you in this effort of us, Americans, restoring America, restoring liberty to America, and serving America by serving our fellow person. We're going to open up for question and answers now. If you're able to refrain to the subject matter topic, that'd be wonderful. If you have other topics, please feel free to ask. Don't feel constrained to that. It's our honor and privilege to ask, to respond to whatever questions that you might have. So with that, back to you, Martin, and back to you, Michael.
All right. Thank you so very, very much, John. It's an exciting weekend. Thank you for detailing it out for us. You mentioned AmericansRestoringAmerica.com. Are you aware that there's another name for that, if you plug it in, it will still take you there?
Okay, I'll play along. Gee, Michael, I do not know. What is that name?
AmericansWithPitchforks.com.
Actually, I did not know that one. I thought I knew the answer. I thought it was okay. AmericansWithPitchforks.com. Okay.
Yeah. Taken off of the Peasants with Pitchforks from merry old England. Anyways, press star 2 on your keypad, ladies and gentlemen, to raise your hand. Press star 2 on your keypad to start chatting with Brother John here. For those of you on Freedom's Radio, simply look to the center of your monitor. You'll see a silhouette of a rectangle laying on its side. It's empty inside. Left-click there. Type away your comment or your question. Underneath, you'll see a place to put your name and some other information. Then hit Submit. And when you hit that Submit button, it pops up on my end, and I will be happy to lend my voice to your comment or question. And Brother John will be happy to respond in kind. Press star 2 on your keypad. While you're thinking about doing this, and really it's important, we have John here live tonight. You know that we have made most of our recordings now available in replay that we're doing during the week. John is really the only one standing that is here for live interaction. So it's a good thing to take advantage of that opportunity. The other thing I want to share with you while you're considering pressing that star 2 on your keypad is to let you know that Grassfire Communications is doing very well. We have it populated on 2 websites right now, and we're going to stay with those 2 websites for the time being. Some may accuse me of pandering to issues that I am highly in favor of dealing with, and that's true. But the real actual reason for me to use these 2 websites is because I believe that these 2 topics will generate the greatest amount of enthusiasm or registration to become members and to utilize the potent Grassfire Communications there. One is TrumpCommunications.com. So it's just TrumpCommunications.com. And I would encourage you, if you would, to share TrumpCommunications.com with as many as you're able in your address book, your contact list. What people don't realize is that Grassfire Communications is a two-edged sword, meaning that obviously by the name Trump Communications, I'm attempting to instill dialogue about Trump. On the other hand, it can also serve to work against Trump in that it's open to anyone and everyone to freely comment in their opinions regarding the subject matter. And the joy of this is that it works at the venue, at the local county level, which is where you start networking with other people to bring about the kind of society and the kind of government that you want to have. So, you know, it may work against President Trump. It may work for him, depending on what the true numbers are. And, of course, we know by the different rallies that he puts on that seems like the Americans are absolutely in love with him. The other website that is live with Grassfire Communications, it's a module, is, someonesbeatingheart.com, someonesbeatingheart.com. And it's about, you know, choosing life or choosing choice, whatever it is that you particularly side with. But that's the website that Grassfire Communications is on. I had an interesting discussion this afternoon with a gentleman. It was on a conference call. John was there. And we learned about a particular cardinal in San Francisco that I will be attempting to reach out to tomorrow to share someonesbeatingheart.com to. So that's just want to share that. If we don't have anyone raising their hands, pressing star 2 on their keypad, we're going to have an early call tonight. And, you know, John may is just as well retire from the live calls and we'll just run his recordings if that's, you know, what you want.
No.
I'm going to check Freedom's Radio real quickly here.
No, that's not going to happen. And once again, the fact that sometimes I have not been available for the live call, I want to thank you all for your patience and your graciousness. There was about a 9-week spread where I was on walkabout and I was working on things directly for some of our students and directly paying to that. And to that end, I was many times out of pocket or I was in a dark territory where I couldn't, and sometimes I was offshore. Four of the weeks that I was not able to make it for that nine weeks I was on walkabout, a lot of those I was there for, some of them I was not, but four of them that I was not, I was on the Hill at Parts East, reporting before subcommittees and White House counsel on some other task forces that we work with. So I want to thank you all for your patience and your graciousness. When I'm not able to make it personally, you guys are the heart and soul of America. Don't ever forget that. And this is one of the ways you and I and Michael are going to make a difference, and all the other information providers, that we're going to make a difference to return America to its glory and liberty and to Yahweh.
Yeah, listen, many, many decades ago, I mean, back when I started this, I was looking at how court decisions held their position and became future the future basis upon which other courts would make their decisions. And I'd often thought about, you know, wouldn't it be ideal to create a litigation between a plaintiff and a defendant that was an orchestrated event, you know, kind of like what they're doing to Trump today, but doing it with, I think, moral righteousness with regards to important issues like First Amendment, Second Amendment, and so forth, challenging the idea that you have to be a member of the bar in order to be competent counsel, Sixth Amendment counsel, and so forth. Then when John shared with me last year, I think sometime, or even later or longer ago than that, that he had this idea, and he has been pursuing that this idea, which I'd like for him to share with you tonight with regards to the group of people, the assembly that he is attempting to put together, and how the assembly put together can work with Grassfire Communications. They're basically a hand-in-glove. I see it as a hand-in-glove operation rather than two separate individual operations. Would you like to share with the people tonight what your vision is about this assembly and how it can put things together, how it can work?
Well, I'll share one aspect of it, and it's something that we're calling presently legal assistant. But what it is that it'll be a software and or an app that you can either put on your computer or your phone. So if an individual is stopped and detained for a traffic violation or even something more heinous like a parking violation, what happens is or maybe even an IRS issue, so that what happens is they type in what they're being prosecuted for or what the charges are, and then this goes over all the existing legislation and law that would or should apply or that they could erroneously apply to, and then what we do is we set it up so that it gives them a decision-making tree so that when all of a sudden you get an erroneous decision from a judge where they say, hey, look, this is our judgment, and you have to pay this. Well, Your Honor, may I object humbly? Here it says that particular rule is unconstitutional under the following statutes and under the following premises of the Constitution. What do you mean? Well, that's a good question, Your Honor. Did you want an answer? And then it has the ABCs that have already been searched and researched so that the correct decision and liberty prevails. And one possible application of this is obviously Title 26, the IRS, the Internal Revenue Service Code, where individuals are being charged with having responsible filing 1040, but technically by law they're not required to. The object here is to make it so that it is so simple that everything from a traffic violation up, that they'll have no problem sorting it out, and they'll know what's right, and it'll be easily explainable to judiciary or prosecutors or opposing counsel so that the correct decision is more likely to be rendered by the bench or the jury. And this is the way we hope to one of the many, many ways we hope to restore liberty to America.
Thank you. All right. Press star 2 on your keypad, ladies and gentlemen. One more time. Otherwise, we're going to say nighty-night to everyone. I'll check Freedoms Radio one more time. All right. Well, here we go. Nicholas.
Hey, can you hear me?
Perfectly. Go ahead.
Nicholas from Arizona, how are you?
Doing all right. I hope that you're doing all right.
Were you able to get back with the Superior Court this afternoon?
Yeah, I got the, I think you said to go ahead and refile the appeal. And
the notice of appeal, yes.
Yeah. And they said they had held on to it until after the 13th, so they already had one that was submitted correctly or something. But I resubmitted it anyways. And So.
Okay. Now, what happened on your motion for reconsideration?
I believe it's been received, but they have not set a hearing yet.
Okay, because here's what will happen. Now, I wish I could say that, and this is for everybody on this call tonight, that I wish I could say that the rules are the same for all jurisdictions. They are not. Some jurisdictions, and this topic is filing an appeal. Some jurisdictions, you're required to file what's called a motion for reconsideration before they will let you file an appeal. In many of the U.S. district courts, in most of them, you must file a motion for reconsideration before they will accept an application for appeal or a notice of appeal. So what happens is that the thing that's very, very critical is that each individual jurisdiction that you find out in the local rules what applies, and the superior courts of the different states or the state district courts, depending on which state you're in, whatever they call it, those rules are what's important to look up. So, and that's some of what we're discussing with Nicholas from Arizona right now, is the Arizona Superior Court rules. And we have found that presently in Arizona, even though they have rules, they may not always, shall we say, follow or abide by those rules. And so we're having some character building exercises, working with, there's things that could have or should have been recognized and respected, filings that particular Nicholas has filed that should have taken care of the whole case instantaneously. He's had four separate filings that should have, the case should have been dismissed almost instantaneously, but it hasn't. So what's very important is that the judiciary feels that they are correct. They believe they're correct. The prosecutors believe that they're correct. They are not, but what we need to do is tactfully, with diplomacy and respect, show them that they're not, because when we get done with this, if we can have them as an ally when they learn what's correct and not an enemy, that is the best way to finish up. Wouldn't you agree, Nicholas and Michael?
Yes, of course.
Okay, Nicholas, did you have anything else you wanted to share?
I just figured I'd ask a question that I've been sitting on for a while, and it doesn't have to be too in-depth if it's not necessary. I was guided to, or it was put out there what others were doing as far as letting the local or the sheriffs in the different counties of the main area, at least, that you're traveling through, know
ahead,
about
sir.
Your situation. And can you hear me?
Yes. You mean, are you talking as far as status?
I was talking about, like, traveling in, you know, transportation, particularly with how to go about doing so without being pulled over and also without registering. And what I was guided towards is the mechanics lien and abandoned vehicle title, along with, you know, letting the sheriff's offices, you know, having a conversation and giving them paperwork to help, you know, let them know the situation to save everyone time and effort, and also going to the Department of State and trying to get a piece of metal to put on the vehicle or transportation. And I was just looking into doing that myself, and I was not really able to find any information on the mechanics lien or abandoned vehicle title. I was just wondering if you had
Yeah, there's
input.
Yeah, you know what? That's going to be probably two sessions back to back to be able to address that question. And yes, there is a handful that we can address with that, and that we should address. I will also tell you that I was discussing with a State Department official very recently, only about a month and a half ago. I was in that part of town and had a discussion with a State Department official regarding the issues about the fact that American nationals qualify under three sections of the code as potential diplomats or foreign dignitaries, and which would mean that they would technically qualify for a diplomatic plate. And at least, and I told them, at least that's my contention. The gentleman, he says, look, you're kind of stretching things awful far here. And what happened was that he said he would look into it, and he says he understands that the contentions that I made are valid, but he said they are so far from the norm right now, what the day-to-day is that all these people deal with. He said that if he brought it up with his superior, he would probably get terminated immediately. And so he says, he asked me if I could help come up with, you know, the information to stand in the gap to help fill that. So I'm going to work with him on that. And that's not something that's going to be easy, but wouldn't it be nice to drive around with a diplomatic plate?
Yeah, that'd be quite
well,
nice.
Here's the thing, John. When you take someone who has the resources and the knowledge base behind them to press forward in prosecuting their claim of being an American national and the rights associated with it, you just take the first traffic issue that you have and sue, you know, deprivation of rights under color of law, and hammer them and say, and then one day go to like the Department of Motor Vehicles and say, look, this is a lawsuit here that was just won in California, Florida, Texas, wherever, New York, and the settlement was $3,500,000. This whole lawsuit came about because the law enforcement officer wasn't waved off when they ran the tag before even turning their lights on. Or after they turned the lights on, they ran the tag, they could have just walked up to the car and said, excuse me, misidentification, have a great day, and let them go. And it's cost you $3.5 million because they were not provided with that tag. Would you like to make certain that your state does not have that same issue to deal with?
Right. Good point. With that, Nicholas, do you have any other questions?
No, that was just the main thing I wanted to touch on.
Okay.
Wonderful.
Let's you and I plan on chatting probably Thursday or Friday morning, and let's go from there, okay, on the next steps in your case, okay?
All right, sounds good. Appreciate it.
All right, thank you. Anyone else would like to chat? Bill? Tennessee. Would you like to chat? Press star 2 in your keypad real quick. Otherwise, we're going to go ahead and say goodnight to everybody. I'm going to go check Freedom's Radio while you consider that. Stand by. Nope. Back to there. And let me refresh to see if anybody else pressed star 2. All right, John, thank you so very much. Tomorrow night, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to have a recording of Mr. Slevin again explaining to you in depth. Oh, Bill did raise his hand. So we'll cover that right now. Go ahead, Bill.
Well, I hit pound 2 rather than star 2. That's why it took so long.
Yeah.
I just want to tell you, John, how much I appreciate what you are doing. I really do. It's a wealth of information that you're providing. And I'm looking forward to getting more people to listen to these broadcasts.
Well, Bill, we're working on it together, trying to get it together, aren't we?
Yes, we are. And I hope your health is improving.
Yes. After that surgery last week, that kind of was a little bit more than I expected. It actually did a lot more than I expected. It took a little bit more out of me initially, but my next go back's in another week. It's a week from tomorrow. But while I was on walkabout, I got behind. But my mobility and is improving, and my pain is decreasing. So sick 'em doggy.
Yeah. But is there a chance you and I might talk tomorrow?
I tell you what, make an appointment with and through Michael in the morning, and reach out, and we'll go from there.
Very well.
All righty, ladies and gentlemen, you also noticed that from our conversations tonight that with Grassfire Communications, also with the project that Brother John is moving forward with. We're entering into a new phase. Oh, by the way, Brother John, I want you to know that I have for some time owned the domain name Tools for Justice. Tools for Justice.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You can't if you go look that up, you're just going to see that I own it. Nothing else. I've never built a website for it. I had other plans several years ago that just never panned out, so I didn't pursue it. Yet I still kept that. If you like that name, we can use the Tools for Justice if you're interested, or stay with your Remedies in the Law, or come up with something that you want to use on your own. It's up to you. Just want to let you know it's available. And
well, thank you.
So anyways, ladies and gentlemen, we're changing gears. We're going into the next phase of our lives, if you would, with the efforts that are being put forward for the last 20 plus years, almost 30 years. It's strictly been a growth process. It's been a process where it's been about teaching, having students, having teachers, information providers, et cetera. We're now moving to this area. And if you know of anyone, or if you yourself would like to become a blessing to the cause, let us know. Let me know. You've got my contact information. We'll go from there. It's a good time to get in at this opportune time now, for what we're putting together. So thank you so much, Brother John. Thank you for your time tonight. It was a great call. I appreciate you sharing with us what you did this weekend. We look forward to possibly seeing you again next weekend. It's tomorrow night. Join us for Mr. Slevin's limited liability company that has, and by the way, John has one, at least one. I have two for Mr. Slevin so that I can operate commercially as well outside of what I do through your Remedies in the Law. So it's a good call to listen to. Until then, good night, everyone, and be well.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID, followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.